On this special edition of This Week in Enterprise Tech, we're live from the Enterprise Connect Conference in Orlando, Florida. Quiet on the set.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Enterprise Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 33, recorded March 18th, 2013. Live from Enterprise Connect. This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Lantronics, maker of the XPrint server. Print from your iPad, iPhone, or any iOS device to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the coupon code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial and buy one desk phone and get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. A powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code ENTERPRISE. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech. It's the show dedicated to the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and the geek who just wants to know how the world is connected. I'm your host, Father Robert Ballister. I'm the Digital Jesuit. And as you may notice from the scene behind me, I'm on location at the Gaylord Palms here for Enterprise Connect in Florida. Now, this is a show dedicated to the people in the enterprise who want to improve the way they communicate. And for that very purpose, I've assembled a great panel, starting with, as always, Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, thank you very much for being on location here at Enterprise Connect.
It's a pleasure. During the week of Enterprise Connect, I would not be anywhere else.
Yes, and this is your home. You're from Florida, so basically we're on your turf now.
Yeah, it's nice to have everyone down here in the headwaters of the swamp, just enjoying the sort of swampy lifestyle. It's a great place to be.
Speaking of swamp, I will say that having come from D.C. where it was still 28 degrees when I left, landing in Orlando where it was 85 and humid, a little bit of a shock.
It's why we're all here.
Indeed. And another reason why we're all here is the gentleman to my right, Mr. Fred Knight. He is the GM of Enterprise Connect, this wonderful conference that we're at. Fred, thank you very much for coming on.
Padre, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, and you've been in this industry for a while. Well, just for a while.
Yes, I'm old.
Okay, well, I was going to say veteran. I was going to say experience. But can you tell our listeners a little bit about the experience that you bring to Enterprise Connect?
Sure. This event began in 1990 when the voice world was moving from analog to digital. Over the next 10 years, that evolved as we moved from digital to IP. And in the last decade, really, we've been moving from pure IP into unified communications and a much broader vision of what enterprise communications is about.
That's really been one of the amazing things about networking, because we used to consider telephone communication separate from, well, where our computers plug into. And then somewhere along the line, they just started converging. And now a new generation doesn't know a world in which they weren't converged.
Well, that's right. And when you think about what you have in your smartphone, that is more horsepower than, you know, people could have imagined on their desktop just 10 years ago. Converged communications is taken for granted.
Right. Now let's talk about the event itself, because we are here at Enterprise Connect.
Yes.
What is Enterprise Connect? What sets it aside from other conferences that people may have heard of, like Comdex of old, or CES, or Interrupt? What's the specific bent for vendors and attendees gathering here in Florida?
So the first word in our name, enterprise, is one thing that sets us apart. You mentioned CES, you mentioned Comdex. Those were, number one, focused on the industry. A lot of it was consumer-based and also one part of the industry selling to another. Our focus ever since the beginning has been on large enterprises, state and local government, universities, organizations that have to provide communications for a large number of people. And even though, far be it for me to ever contradict anything Mitt Romney said, but enterprises aren't people. And so the things that they have to consider as they go through procurement and planning and building an architecture, even though they have all of the wonderful gadgets that we take for granted at home, there are reasons why it's a different set of rules in the enterprise.
When was the first Enterprise Connect? When did this show start?
1990.
So in this 20-plus years, what's changed? What have you seen from what were we using in 1990? It was still all PBXs, right?
Correct. So what's changed is really everything. I mean, from a technology standpoint, you can probably find PBXs that were sold in 1990 still in use today. But the reality of it is that a large part of the hardware has become a commodity. This was a very much a hardware-centric business. That's changing. We're morphing into a much more software-centric, applications embedded inside communications, or rather communications actually embedded inside applications, and also the webification of enterprise communication. I mean, we're going out over Skype, I think. I mean, we've been using the web for voice and for video for a long time in our personal lives. But again, that process is really just getting underway within the enterprise.
Okay. Looking back over, let's just say, take the last 10 years. So if we go 10 years back, we see the beginning of, I think, the modern trend in converged communications, in unified communications. We see a melding of standards. We see different companies coming out with products that are really designed for telepresence rather than just phone, just video, just whatever. And now we have a whole new level of expectation.
Correct.
About what someone wants out of a UC system. What someone expected back in 2000 is a far cry from what they've expected now. What do you think has changed, the biggest change in that last 10 years?
Well, you can never underestimate the power of how the technology has changed. The cost to do converged communications simply was out of reach even 10 years ago, and that we've been riding that cost curve. And the ability to pack the kinds of capability that we can carry around in our pocket, that's an economic issue and a technology issue. So we're seeing a combination of those two forces drive everything. What you said, though, about expectations is huge, because that really is what's changing now. We have come to expect video, a melding of data and graphics and audio communications within a single session, within a single application, within a single transaction. And those were dreams when this conference began almost 25 years ago. We talked about that as kind of the long-term objective, and here we are. We're actually able to do these things.
Right. It is amazing that some of the things that we take for granted now, the fact that I can access on my smartphone an interface that could reroute the calls for an entire enterprise, that was science fiction. That was something we never thought would be possible in the time of the old PBX. And so, yeah, expectations have changed as the technology has increased. My question to you would be this. Looking at this massive conference of vendors and attendees assembled behind us, looking at the fact that you have people here who are trying to learn the latest about real-time communications, and you have vendors here to really push their wares.
Right.
What would you say is the guiding principle of Enterprise Connect as far as hooking together vendors who want to provide products and services and attendees who are maybe not even sure what they want?
Right. So we will have, over the course of the 3.5 days, close to 60 sessions. We'll have meetings going on all the time. Enterprise Connect is a platform for people to get together. Our point there, we do not take a point of view with regard to this is how you, company X or Y, should migrate. Our job as a show organizer is to find consultants, analysts, independent third parties, and say, look, from this set of circumstances, here are the options that exist. Here are the trade-offs that exist. You have to learn how to adapt those factors to your own organization. So our job really is, number one, to be a platform where everybody gets together. And I'm grateful that Enterprise Connect has grown, and it really is the place where everybody in this business is on the show floor. We're going to, secondly, we've been able to build relationships with trainers, consultants, analysts, people who work with enterprise IT all the time and who, for whom the constructs aren't theoretical. They actually understand what's real in an IT world. And we put on sessions that are designed to get at those issues.
Okay, so let me bring it down one more level. And that's to say this. When someone comes to Enterprise Connect, hopefully he or she has an idea of what they're going to find here. They're going to find vendors who are providing communication solutions. They're going to find your workshops and your keynotes and your classes that will teach them how they can best use those solutions. But what do they bring home? I guess the question I'm trying to get at is, in a world where there are so many people saying you can find everything on the internet, all the information you need, all the decision-making that you have to make, you can get all that in your browser, why should they show up to something like Enterprise Connect? And on the other side, why would a vendor show up to an event like Enterprise Connect when they could take that money and say, just push out review units to 30 reviewers?
Right. So, interesting point. The reality of the situation is people come for many reasons. From an enterprise buyer standpoint, they're typically in a planning or procurement mode, so they're coming here with an agenda. They know that within the next 12 or 18 months, they're going to be building a plan to address a certain set of issues. And so what hopefully they're going to walk away with is not just what you can get from a data sheet, but instead they're going to have some objective and anecdotal as well kind of information that you get when you are in a bar and you sit down next to somebody and they've got the same problem and you can talk it through and they said, hey, I tried vendor X, or I tried this particular path, and you know what? It didn't work out so well, and here's why. So it's an experiential learning. It's face-to-face communications. I mean, God knows our business is devices that intermediate between personal. So we certainly believe in all of the technology, but it's also the fact that we're human beings. You rub shoulders. You actually get to know one another, and there's a level that you can't get any other way. I think similarly if you're a vendor, that you're motivated by a couple factors. Number one, competitive issues. Everybody's here. If you're in this business, again, I'm very grateful. Enterprise Connect is the place that you kind of have to show the flag, or maybe you're not perceived to be a player. Secondly, there are a lot of buyers here. There are a lot of buyers here from big companies. And the opportunity to get to know them, to have an exchange, to understand what a particular enterprise is looking for, again, it's very tough to do other than in a face-to-face mode.
Enterprise Connect is in that weird space because at its core, you're about providing services and technologies to people so that they don't have to show up on the physical presence. And yet, I think you brought out something very interesting there, and that is, this is not just a show about technology. I mean, if it was, yeah, you could just do that on the internet. You could do that through a browser.
Correct.
This is about going and sitting next to 500 other professionals who are doing the same thing, who have gone through the exact same experiences, and you can tap into that and let that guide what services and products you actually get.
It's absolutely a great point. We are a portfolio. We have this 1 week here where we gather under one roof. But the rest of the year, we're putting on webinars. We've got a website, nojitter.com, that covers this set of issues. So we're using the web all the time. But the reality of it is, it's useful for some things, and it's less useful for others. Similarly, a big event like this has an awful lot to deliver, but there's a lot that it can't do. Once everybody goes home, they're gone. And you need some other way to sustain the community. And so these things kind of work together. I mean, if you think about the history of media, relatively few media have disappeared. I know there's talk that print will, and certainly it's shrunk considerably. But, you know, radio didn't kill the movies. TV didn't kill radio. The pie instead got bigger. And I think that's what we're seeing in IT. Modes of people are desperate, I think, as a human being, to find ways in which to connect. And whether that's face-to-face, it's not an either-or. If, God forbid, you're unable to move, you know, then technology has a different role to play and a different set of options. But, you know, in general, we want to try to reach out to our fellow humans in as many ways as possible. And that's... So I don't think it's either or. They all have their place. They all have different cost factors. And you have to try to assemble as many of these things as your market will accept and people have time to deal with.
I want to ask you one last question.
Sure.
And this is really a question from the chat room because we've got some wonderful people in our chat room 24 hours a day.
Great.
And one of the questions I hear most often is they like enterprise tech. They like the show. They like hearing about the latest and greatest in products and services. But it always seems so daunting because there's so much of it. And as they start surfing the products and the services and going from website to website, they don't know where to start. So as a person who is, I'm going to say veteran, is a veteran of enterprise communications, enterprise technology, what would the advice be that you would give to, say, the lonely, hopeful engineer in our chat room who is looking to start building up his knowledge about enterprise communications, enterprise networking, enterprise tech?
Well, I think some focus is required because, as you said, the sheer amount of stuff that comprises enterprise communications, to go through all that is impossible. So you need a certain set of focal points. You need to kind of be trying to solve a specific set of problems and understand the scale at which a solution, what scale of a solution fits your needs. Once that happens, I think then the web does help you sort through what your options are. Obviously, if you're in the enterprise space, I hope you'll look at nojitter.com and take a look at what we do on the Enterprise Connect website. But it's not going to be necessarily for everybody. But through the people who participate in our website and others, in the same way that your chat room people are a resource to among themselves to one another, the same thing is true of the people who post on No Jitter and who are speaking at Enterprise Connect. They're totally reachable.
Right.
And even if they're not going to be able to solve the problem or answer the question, there's a pretty darn good chance that they're going to know somebody who does.
Right. Fred, we're here in Florida, but Enterprise Connect is in several different places. In fact, your events are in several different places.
Great.
So if people wanted to come to one of your events, give me a list of where you're going to be and where UBM TechWeb is going to be.
Well, UBM TechWeb is quite broad. The reality is, within the scope of things we're doing, it's almost every other week there's an event taking place across the country and indeed across the world. Enterprise Connect really does this show here during March. We do road shows, typically New York, Chicago, the Bay Area, the L.A. We've done them in Canada. We've done them in Dallas, Denver. So it kind of depends on the topic and what we're focusing on. As I mentioned, we do webinars almost two or three a month. And so if you come to our website, our schedule is up there. If you scroll down the page, there are links to all the other TechWeb events, and you can find out what's going on where.
Right. And Titus in the chat room has already figured out the web pages, so we'll make sure those end up in the show notes.
Cool.
Now, I want to give you 60 seconds to talk about anything you want to talk about upcoming shows, about promoting yourself. But there is one thing that we do with our guests. First of all, thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thank you.
But I'd like you to take your hand, do like the victory sign, and put it sideways. And this is how we say thank you. Thank you very much for coming on.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I learned a new handshake. I like it.
Okay. Tell us what's going on.
Well, I mean, fundamentally, it's been a pleasure to be here with you, and I'm very grateful for this exposure. Look, we've been in business for a long time. We focus on a particular market. We don't try to be all things to all people. I'm very proud of the team that we've been able to assemble over the years. I'm very proud of the longstanding relationships we've been able to build with the sponsors and exhibitors, with the speakers, and importantly, with the attendees. 40-45% of the people who come each year are alumni. So we're about building a community, or really participating in a community. We're a participant. We're not the owner.
Yeah. Enterprise Connect, come once, and you'll come back.
You got that right, buddy. It's just like a great restaurant.
Brad, thank you so very much for your time. You know what? I'll make you this promise. Any chance I get, I'm going to broadcast from Enterprise Connect, and every time we come, we're going to have you on because I can tell from the chat room that they love you.
Hey, I love you guys. Talk to you soon. See you soon. Padre, thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Fred Knight, the GM of Enterprise Connect. Now, we're sitting here in a hall, as you can tell, because it sounds like there are Zambonis and lawnmowers behind us, filled with some of the greatest companies in the IT field. We've got everyone from Cisco to Polycom, Avaya, all showing off their different ways to connect. And one of the leading ways to connect is on your mobile iOS device. But what happens when you need to print? Now, we all know that the iPhone, the iPad, and the iPod are great devices, but printing can be a bit of a pain in the butt. Now, there are a few ways that we've learned to sort of kludge around that. You can attach the document to an email and send it to yourself, or you can find one of those dongles that lets you hook up to a USB device so you can write it, transfer to another computer, and print. You could do all that, or you could just get the XPrint server from Lantronics. Now, this is one of the things I like about the XPrint server. It's an easy device to use, but it's an advanced device for system administrators. The XPrint server enables wireless printing from your iPad, iPhone, or iPod Touch. It eliminates the needs to print through applications, install software, or email yourself documents for printing, and it works with the USB or network printers that you already own, whether it's wired or wireless. More than 4,000 of the most popular printers on the market, including multifunction printers. Now, setup is easy. You just open it up, you plug it in, and you start printing. But for the more advanced, it also includes a web interface so you can customize your XPrint server. A single XPrint server supports multiple printers and virtually unlimited iOS devices. The home edition is $99 and supports up to 8 USB and 2 network printers, while the office edition is $199 and supports an unlimited number of network printers and, get this, feature support for Active Directory. So if you've got permissions set on your network, you can use the Lantronics XPrint server to migrate those permissions to everyone on a mobile device. It's the best of bring your own device. Now, here's what I want you to do. If you're listening to me, I want you to go to xprintserver.com/twit for more information and to buy. And we've got a special offer. You can use the coupon code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. Remember, visit xprintserver.com/twit and at checkout, enter the coupon code TWIT. We thank Lantronics for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now, let's get back to it. We've got Curtis Franklin sitting here. Curtis is my long-suffering co-host. He's the guy who's not Chiebert, so you can tell he's not Hawaiian. But he's here to discuss a few stories that are making the rounds in the enterprise world. The first, which is AT&T trying to bypass the FCC. Curtis, what do you know about the story?
Well, it's interesting. This is one that has its roots back in some court cases. And I think this is a great illustration of the way that the legal system and technology can get out of step with one another. Sometimes the legislators try to get ahead of where the technology is and put a preemptive stop on something. But much more often you have something like this, where a company has found an element in the law. And as it turns out, what they wanted to do anyway makes it much easier for them to do the kind of business that's great for them and maybe less so for their customers.
And of course, what we're talking about is the movement of AT&T away from circuit switched equipment to packet switch. Now, for the people who may not know the difference between circuit switch and packet switch, the easiest way I can think of is in a circuit switch network, let's say I'm making a phone call to New York, there's an actual physical line that would be connected between my phone and the phone in New York. Whereas in a packet switch network, my call would be broken down into millions of packets sent on their way like every other piece of information in a switched network, reassembled, and it looks the same, but it actually acts very differently. The big reason why this important is because the FCC has absolute jurisdiction over a circuit switch network. They have no jurisdiction over a packet switch network. So what does that mean? If the FCC doesn't have jurisdiction over a packet switch network, and if AT&T becomes a fully packet switch network, well, what does that mean for us?
Well, on one level, let's think about some of the things that they had, that the FCC has done with the circuit switch networks. Net neutrality. They looked at things like access to the long distance lines for various local carriers. All of this was based on the idea that you were dealing with a finite, limited resource in those circuits, in the circuit switch network. If that's out of the way, then a lot of the cost containment that was put in place, sort of administratively by the FCC, goes away completely, and all of a sudden we are, to use a much overused phrase, in the Wild West when it comes to things like pricing of these inter-carrier relationships that form the basis of a lot of our consumer and enterprise telecommunications costs.
Now, the Wired article suggests that there may be a number of consequences for this. The first is that we could have higher prices, because if AT&T is no longer constrained under the provisions of being a common carrier, then they don't need to do the things that would afford them potential competitors. They don't have to open up their network to a potential competitor. They also don't have to do things like run broadband out to rural communities. If they're no longer a phone company, they don't have to answer to the phone company rules. Another thing is that you could have service disruptions. This was a bit of analysis that was brought up by a public utilities employee who was saying that once they remove FCC jurisdiction over AT&T, there is nothing that says you have to guarantee that service is back up within 24, 48, 72 hours. AT&T could say, oh, well, we lost all of Wyoming. Too bad Wyoming's not that big of a profit center for us, so I guess we'll get to it when we can. And the third thing, and this is the one that I find very, very disturbing, is you've heard this term before, the digital divide, that there is a difference between how the well-off access the internet, access telcos, and how those who are less advantaged do the same. If AT&T is no longer underneath the jurisdiction of the FCC, and the FCC can no longer say, look, you can't price gouge just because it costs more to roll out a network in so-so, Bumsville, backwater place, then we could be looking at significant price increases for those who could least afford it. What's your take on the? There's a lot of people who are saying that this is going to happen. There are some other people who are saying this is doom and gloom. This is fear, uncertainty, doubt. This is FUD. What's your stand? Do you think this is a serious thing that we need to look for, or this is just the natural evolution of business in networking?
A little of all of those. And here's my take. First, I would want to look at it, and again, as I always do, I will preface this with I'm not an attorney and don't pretend to be one. But I do think that we probably need to look and see what part of AT&T this applies to. We tend to speak of AT&T as a monolithic organization. I strongly suspect that there are some legal divisions between what used to be AT&T long lines and the local telcos. So we don't know which pieces of this are going to be affected by that ruling. With that said, I do think it's in the nature of the business. We've been watching this evolution really since the late 80s, when the whole notion of packet switching first started to break big. The notion at that time that you could take a telephone conversation, break it up into lots of little bits, and put it back together on the far end was just foreign to the old-time telco guys. And now that that generation is gone, we don't think anything of this. It really has changed in fundamental ways. And I think that to a great extent, we are open to more competition, to more options when it comes to receiving phone service, and in many cases, a different importance that we place on the basic, what we used to call POTS, plain old telephone service. It's not the same world that it was 10 or 15 years ago, so I don't know that I go with all the gloom and doom. certainly different. There are absolutely some individuals and probably some individual companies that will be inconvenienced by this, but I don't think it's going to be any sort of major disruption or change in the way we're doing business. If there's anything surprising, I think it's going to be just how little effect this has on most of us when it comes to telcos.
And I just received a message from Chibert, who's currently in the chat room, and he says he absolutely loves AT&T. He thinks there's absolutely nothing wrong with this whatsoever, and he, for one, welcomes our AT&T overlords. So thank you, Chibert. Thank you. It's good to know where you stand. Let's go on to the second story, and that is turning the tables. This one, there's an enterprise bent to it, but it's really because I love the story. Hackers in Australia used a casino's network to turn the tables on the casino. What happened was they accessed the network cameras in a high-stakes whale poker room. They were able to use the cameras to check out the hands of the other players, and then somehow they signaled to the whale when he should fold, when he should bet up, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this is truly interesting, A, because it's a big part like Ocean's 11. This shouldn't happen. But the second thing is the fact that a casino network, which has long been considered to be one of the most secure networks that you can find, was accessed by some hackers who then used the casino's own resources, the casino's own cameras against them. That should be a cautionary tale to all enterprises, because we build monitoring into our networks. We monitor everything from the traffic to the devices to, with cameras, to the people who are using the network. Now, Curtis, what does this say about the precautions we should take to make sure that the monitoring devices that we put up to monitoring the network are not in turn used to monitor us?
Well, I think that the big failure here was a failure of imagination on the part of the casino network crew. When you think about it, my suspicion is, and again, I don't have direct intimate knowledge of their layout, but I suspect that this is actually a result of their security protocols. There have to be certain network segments that they do keep segregated and probably keep away from internet access.
Right.
And they took all of the things that they imagined were vulnerable, things where they imagined there could be an economic impact, and segregated them from what in other terms might be commodity internet, things that we'll be a little bit less stringent about because, hey, no one cares.
Right.
And the cameras fell into the no one cares bin until someone did. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if casinos all over the world weren't now revamping exactly how they protect the various pieces of their network.
Virgil in the chat room is quoting hackers, hack on them as they hack onto you. And actually, J.C. Calhoun has a very interesting point. He's saying the reporting is incomplete, and I think it is. At the time of this broadcast, we don't have all the facts because, of course, the casino is being mum about mm-hmm. how their network was penetrated. He's thinking that it was actually someone in the security room who was able to pass on information to someone else who then signaled the gambler. But even then, the question, I think, is valid, which is, if we are gathering all of this information and if we've built in the monitoring tools into our networks, how do we guarantee that they're used in the proper way? I want to throw this back to you with a slightly different bend on it. And that's to say, here at Enterprise Connect, we're dealing with technology that is used to communicate, right? We're dealing with VoIP system. We're dealing with telepresence. We're dealing with systems that allow Skype or GoToMeeting. But what's to ensure that those don't become a weak point in our enterprise? For example, if I'm having a telepresence between my office here and my office in Japan, and we are sending vital documents back and forth, and we're talking about our strategic planning, we don't often put a lot of thought into making sure that there's no one in the middle picking up our conversations, do we?
Well, some of us take more care with things like the man in the middle attack that
right.
you just mentioned
right.
than others. But I think that we do need to look at what the chat room brought out. In that case, the failure was not with technology at all. The technology would have behaved exactly as it was supposed to. The failure was on the human level.
As it normally is.
And yeah. Here's the thing. there are limits to what technology can do to protect against human failures. And there are limits to what we can do to balance being able to responsibly use the technology versus people being unable to use it irresponsibly. And it's a problem. I think if someone can come up with that implantable chip that absolutely requires that a person wearing the chip behave ethically, then it's possible that they've just crossed over from technology into the realm of your day job.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, you know, that's one of the concerns that we always have to have when we're moving into a converged network. You know, as we add data to our voice, to whatever it is that we're going to be adding on top of that, it means that you now have a single point of vulnerability. If someone can compromise your network, it's not like they have to compromise your telephone network and your telecom network and your data network. They've got the whole thing right there. The following guest is going to be talking a little bit about what we can do to design our networks better to prevent against that. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the communication system that we use back at the Brick House. Now, when Leo built the Brick House, he decided that the future was going to be cloud. We wanted to use cloud for everything. That meant that the documents for our shows were going to be hosted on Google Docs. It meant that we were going to be doing our email servers in the cloud. We weren't going to put everything at the Brick House. And it means that when our IT Russell came to us and told us that we could have a PBX, a full-featured PBX, and have no PBX hardware in the basement, well, Leo jumped on it. We went with RingCentral because it gives us a zero maintenance, very low cost, very low overhead solution to having a full-featured PBX. There's no PBX hardware to install or maintain. RingCentral allows us to easily customize all of our call handling, and our producers can get their voicemails and their emails and their faxes right on their smartphones. It's really, really that simple. Now, RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing, as low as $20 per month per user, and we swear by it. In fact, if you've watched The Tech Guy or any of the other shows that Leo does, you can see the Polycom phone sitting on his desk connected to RingCentral. It's the way that he communicates, it's the way that we communicate, and it's the way that we want you to communicate. Now, you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and they have a special offer for my listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So call this number, designated for my listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Again, one more time for Enterprise Connect Luck, 800-543-9980. Or you can go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. And we thank RingCentral for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, the designer, the network architect, he's sort of the guy in the matrix who makes everything go together. And he's the guy here at Enterprise Connect who makes sure that we get our bits. Glenn, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome, Robert. Nice to be here again. And now, hello, Curtis.
Now, the last time our audience saw you, you were the lead engineer for Interop. So what's going on here? You jump around?
That I do. It's part of my job is doing trade show networks, event networks. I suppose the best way to describe me is a network roadie. Yeah, just travel around, set up networks for events, tear them down, move on to the next one.
Right. So you've got years of experience building the kind of networks that support Interop, which is, you know, one of the de facto standards for high performance enterprise networking, for Enterprise Connect, which is all about communication. You pretty much have seen it all, right?
I wouldn't say I've seen it all, but I've seen a fair bit of it over the years.
You've seen enough.
Enough, yeah, I like without okay. a doubt.
Now, let's get into this, because we're talking about Enterprise Connect behind us.
Yep.
One of the things that we just talked about is how do you, well, design for the challenges of a unified communications network? We brought up the point about how in the old day you had a network for your voice, you had a network for your data. And it could be that the network for your voice was a PBX or even the old POTS analog system.
Correct,
yep. Now they're coming together. What are the unique challenges that you're finding in making sure you have a network that will work for both?
I think part of the challenge is changing the mindset of realizing that voice, video, all these new things that are coming down the pipe are essentially applications that run on the network. So you just, instead of designing the network from the ground up, perhaps as we used to do many years ago, where here is the network, this is what you can do with it. We've now got to look at what's going to be actually running on the network, what sort of data, what sort of traffic patterns, what do the users want to do on the network, whether it is voice, whether it's video, whether it's, you know, some sort of application, some web application, some financial type application. And we've got a design for that. And it all is, as well as the application, it also goes down to what devices do they want to use on the network? Yeah, how are they going to access the information? How are they going to, you know, talk, make a voice call? Is it going to be via the traditional phone type arrangement, VoIP phone? Is it going to be via a mobile handset? Is it going to be via their PC?
Right.
And we've got to accommodate all those factors when we're building networks.
Right, right.
Now, RTC, real-time communication, has been around for a while. I mean, if you think about it, a telephone is RTC. That's real-time. A text is RTC. A chat room is RTC.
Well, I think probably the simplest form of RTC, you know, real-time communication, was the traditional conference, the traditional meeting of people sitting around a table discussing something, real-time collaboration. I think what we've looked, the way we look at it these days, is we're looking at real-time collaboration or collaboration across geographical boundaries. And I think one other thing we're starting to see, and it goes to this paradigm shift again, where we're seeing consumer-type technologies coming into the enterprise. Because the enterprise, you know, in reality, the vendors, they will go and do their own thing. And
ladies and gentlemen. that is actually, Enterprise Connect is now officially open, and so we will be flooded by attendees. Actually, hold on to that. I want to go over to Curtis here.
Sure.
Curtis, this morning, Enterprise Connect had part of its conference in a conference. So it was RTC, and they had a big room that was set aside for it. And they were so overwhelmed with attendees that they actually had to take down walls in order to make room for more people. Why do you think, since it's been around for so long, since, you know, it's not really a new concept, why do you think RTC is suddenly hot in enterprise communications?
Well, the thing that we were hearing about this morning wasn't simply RTC, it's WebRTC.
Yes.
Now,
that's
WebRTC is new because right now, if you want to have RTC-enabled applications, you're talking about a dedicated native application on a platform. That means that if you wanted to have, say, a Macintosh, a PC, Windows 8, for example, Linux, and then the host of mobile devices, you've got to create a separate native application on each one of those. Huge effort, huge expense, and each one is going to be different in the way it looks and feels. Now, you have people from companies like Google, like all of the major networking companies, as well as the operating system platform companies who have come together and said, let's do this within a browser and have the same sort of functions but allow it to be done without having to do native applications on each platform. The promise of that is incredible for what it allows you to do in a cost-effective, time-effective way. And as you said, it's really the first time I've ever seen this in a conference. We took a five-minute pause in the middle of an hour-and-a-half conference, and they struck an air wall to let all of the standing room people be put into chairs that they had set up in the additional space. This is a huge, hot area, and I think it's only going to get bigger over the next, say, 1 to 4 years, because this is still in fairly early days. We're just now going into beta on a couple of the browsers, going into alpha on a couple of others. The mobile stuff is still not even there yet. So this is going to be news for some time to come.
Back to you, Glenn. Why is this such a big deal? I mean, just because it's WebRTC, just because tools will start to look the same, why are businesses that are going to be using those tools excited? I mean, doesn't it really not matter to them that they're going to use the solution, whatever solution that they bought is what they're going to be using? What does WebRTC add to enterprise communication?
I think probably the key thing is that, you know, it becomes an application that sits in the browser. And it's, to some degree, from my mind, it's been driven from the consumer up. You know, we all have Skype, or we've all used Skype, and if you've got the right version, you can do, you know, multi-person chat. Google Talk, or Google, you know, the Google app.
Right, right.
You know, where you can actually Google Plus. There we go. Having a brain fade there. Where you can actually have...
The Google thing.
You can create essentially a chat room, which is real-time collaboration for a large group of people. So we're seeing these consumer tools running in browsers and running in, ubiquitous type applications. And that's starting to make its way into the enterprise. And, you look at the enterprise, there's a number of, a couple of disparate type systems based on proprietary technology, or one proprietary, one not so proprietary. And in reality, the two don't talk to each other that well. So there's also opportunities within the whole thing for the endpoints, or the user becomes an endpoint, or the browser becomes an endpoint. But there's also an opportunity for some of the smaller vendors or more nimble vendors to be able to do the gateway or the translation type mechanisms to federate or interoperate or whatever you want to call it.
Let's get down to the brass nuts here. When you're a network designer, that's your thing. You are an expert in making sure that all the different minutiae is taken care of in the overall network design. What would you say are the challenges, the biggest challenges of designing a UC network? Because it's no longer just the most bandwidth at any given time. It's doing things like making sure you VLAN off traffic properly. It's doing things like making sure your version of QoS, whatever it is that you're using to do that, is implemented across all the devices. It's doing things like making sure that your wireless system can handle the proliferation of mobile devices and BYOD situations. So as a network engineer, at an event like Enterprise Connect or at an event like Interop, what are the things that you always keep in the back of your mind when you're designing the network?
I suppose, the first thing, and this is probably the same for the enterprises as well, it has to work. It's got to be stable, it's got to be reliable, it's got to perform, and to a degree you've got to make it secure. And one of the challenge with that is not just from your internal users, but we're talking to your partners or your clients' users in another building, in another country, wherever they are. And so you've got to take that into consideration as well. So I suppose the three things are probably stability, performance, and security. And you look at those three things and you design the network appropriately.
Now, speaking of security, we just covered a story about how some interesting individuals in Australia were able to use a casino's own network against them. There's a whole bunch of different theories about how this happened. But what would be one of the things that you would do, basic level of security, that would make sure that the security cameras in a high-value environment would only be reachable by those who are supposed to have access?
That's a bit of a tough one. I suppose, the only way to make any network secure is to have no network at all. Don't connect to anything. It's walk along. I think in reality, you've got to start looking from the ground up, and this is you're looking at physical security. The actual cables that are feeding things, where are they running, how are they running, how are they protected? The connection points, how are they protected? Wireless in those sort of environments is probably not a great idea. So you're looking at, you're running from the physical cables up, and you start to protect it. And so you just layer your security on top. And the last thing is there's always a human element.
Right.
So you've got to look after those people. Excuse me. Whether you, you've probably got to pay them reasonably well or make sure there's people watching people and incent them to be honest and hope they are.
Right.
But there's always that element where, if you throw enough money at a problem, you'll find a solution.
So you're bringing us the engineering perspective. I want to go across the table here and hopefully get the executive perspective. We already know that security is a bit of a black box for a lot of executives. They know that they should be investing in it, but maybe they don't know where they should be investing. What do you think is the general level of competence, general level of understanding at the executive level in the enterprise on network security? Do they understand that their converged network, while at the same time is fantastically feature-packed, can also be incredibly, a big vector point for data theft and for security breaches?
I think depending on the organization, you're making a great leap when you think, first of all, that they understand the concept of a converged network. There are some, of course, who do. But by and large, I think security is one of these areas where executives tend to place a great deal of trust in their professional employees.
Right.
The CISO, the network administrators, the network architects, these are the people that the executives have to be able to trust to know what they're doing, to be able to explain the risks in terms that make sense to a business executive, and then to act responsibly. You know, when we were talking in an earlier segment about the human risk, so much of business is based on this concept of trust. And that's nowhere more critical than when it comes to security implementation. You have to be able to trust the professionals. And without that, then I think the executives are completely at sea when it comes to, right, to this sort of topic.
Glenn, I want to throw you something that I'm seeing in the chat room.
Yeah.
Red5, who is a longtime contributor to the chat room, has said that businesses don't like to invest in things they can't see.
Oh, very
and,
much
and so,
yeah.
And so here, of course, they're going to invest in the shiny toys. They're going to invest in the,
yes,
teleconference system. They're going to invest in the new VoIP system.
Yeah.
But when you tell them, well, part of this is also you have to invest in security, that's,
yeah,
a more difficult sell, right?
Oh, very much so. And it always has been and always will be, as Curtis alluded to. You know, you've got to trust your CIO or CISO or whoever it is, and trust the people operating your network and give them the tools and the backing to make it happen. Because they're essentially, you know, we talk about, you know, these networks are enabling business and enabling profit and process,
right,
and whatever else. But a lot of that is just talking heads.
Right.
Well, you know, they're talking the talk, but not walking the walk. And that has got to come from the top down. And part of that, I think, is as network engineers, network designers, operators, we've got to take off the engineering hat, put on the business hat, and learn how to talk to the higher levels of management to get them to invest in what we're trying to do and have them believe in it as well. They're certainly going to believe in the fact that, yeah, an iPad is useful in a corporate environment. Okay, great idea, Mr. CFO or whoever it is, but we need to be able to control it if something goes wrong.
Right.
Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, they fully understand the benefits of doing it, but sometimes they don't understand the features and how it does it. And to some degree, they don't need to know how or know why, just that it works.
Right.
But we've got to be able to sell the fact that, hey, listen, bring this on board, certainly. Let's use it. It's going to be a very productive tool for us. But we've got to do it in a controlled manner.
Right.
So we've got to think like business people and think like these, like the CEO, understand where he's coming from and relate to him so he can relate to us.
Curtis, let me throw that back at you, because this has often been one of those resung refrains. And that is the lone IT guy who gets it. He gets what the executives are trying to do. They only want to invest in things that are going to bring value back into the business. But he can't really, this IT person, can't really express what the value that investing in security will do. You know, he can, in general terms, explain why it's important to protect a converged network, but he can't give the CIO or the CTO the hard numbers or the hard metrics that the CTO would need to go to the CEO and say, we need X amount of money in order to secure our network because we depend on the network to provide value. What do you think is the best strategy? If one of the people in our chat room was that lonely IT person, what would you say would be the things he would have to do to be able to go to his CTO, his CIO, and give him those numbers?
Well, there are some sources out there for numbers. As a matter of fact, because of the book that Brian Chi and I are writing right now, I was doing some research in the last week, and there are organizations like the Poneman Institute that have come out with research reports that try to put a hard dollar cost on losses. Interestingly enough, one of their numbers is that the average cost of a security breach to a company is something on the order of $3.5 million. If you look at things like regulatory non-compliance and go into second order cost, the cost of non-compliance with regulations goes up over $9 million.
Right. Right.
And this is the sort of thing where the cost per employee actually climbs as the organization gets larger. So it is possible to put a number on this. You can look out there for the resources. But I will also say that from a career standpoint, if you are in IT and you cannot put this in terms that the business suite understands, then you have a natural limitation on your career. There's
right.
a certain point in going up the IT hierarchy where being able to communicate with the business side is critical. If you don't have that skill, that's the one that you need to learn.
Wait. I want to get both of you in on this. Are you telling me that if I want to move up the corporate ladder, I can't just talk to machines?
Unfortunately, it's a fact of life these days, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, there is a point at which you have to understand that it's not the machines who are cutting your check.
Right. Well, technically it is, but there's a human there pushing the button.
A human pushing the button and a human telling them what numbers to put on the check.
Yeah.
And so if you want those numbers to grow, you've got to be making an impact on the humans, not just the machines.
Now, I want to give you the last question, and it's the same one that I gave the friend. And that is, there's a lot of murmuring about how the internet generation doesn't need events like this anymore. We don't need an Enterprise Connect. We don't need an interop. We don't need to show up because we could get all the information we want off the internet. What would you say to someone who came to you and said, prove to me that my business or that my customers need to show up to a physical event in order to make my business grow?
I think it's probably the challenge most live events have. And excuse me, I'm getting a cold, like somebody else that I know of. I think Enterprise Connect's one of these new unique propositions where it's the conference track, the education tracks are very vendor agnostic. There's a lot of panel type conversations going on with analysts, people from the industry, people from the end user community who are comparing apples to apples, in some cases apples to oranges, but giving their experiences. And so there's a lot of good takeaways from that. I mean, you get out onto the expo floor and you're seeing vendor A right beside vendor B, and you're able to compare product sets and stories side by side.
Right.
And I think that's when, and talk to the people who are selling them, implementing them, designing them. And that's one of the key things with face-to-face marketing.
Right. I think that's one of the things that I've learned, which is if you're doing it right, you're going onto the internet, you're finding all the information ahead of time, but then you show up at the event and you actually get your hands on the gear,
yeah.
you actually talk to the people, see if they know what it is that they're selling, and hopefully you can meet up with some other attendees who have tried the exact same solution that you're now trying to implement.
Yeah, and I think you're also going to see the startup type companies that are just trying to get their name out into the industry. And you don't see those on the web because they're not known unless you really go searching for them.
Right, right. Now, I do want to take a moment here just to break and speak about the last sponsor of this episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is, very happily, GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. Now, we know that in order to be a successful team, you need to meet with the members of your team. You can't just assume that everyone's on the same page. You can't just assume that everyone needs to know what they're going to do. Now, when we've met face-to-face in the past, you've typically gotten into either a teleconference call or, best case scenario, you've all jumped into cars and planes and buses and boats and automobiles and found a common location where you can actually see one another. But that's not always possible. Planes are expensive. Cars are dangerous. And you know what? We can't all clear our schedule in order to make that physical meeting. Now, if you're like me, you're going to use a solution like GoToMeeting with HD Faces to make up for that lack of travel ability. Now, GoToMeeting with HD Faces is the modern equivalent of a meeting in person. It's those kinds of forced meetings when team members are made to sacrifice their time and productivity that they don't get anything done. It's when a meeting comes naturally, when it's allowed to grow out of the need to communicate with one another, that we do find success. And that's what GoToMeeting with HD Faces allows time and time again. Now, here's how it works. You set up your meeting with a few mouse clicks. Everyone gets an email message that confirms when the meeting's going to be. It gets added to their Outlook calendar, and boom, they're ready to go. On the day of the meeting, one click and one installation of a thin client allows them to participate. They get to see one another, which is important because you can see all the visual cues, you know, that frown or that that furrowed brow or the nodding that tells you that people get what you're trying to do. It also works on Mac, on PC, on tablet, on mobile device. With GoToMeeting, you can share the same screen and you can share the same ideas, just as if you were in the same room. Plus, GoToMeeting now makes it possible to present your meeting from your iPad, which means it's sort of the ultimate accessory in mobile meetings. I like having Citrix as a sponsor because I use GoToMeeting on an almost daily basis. My work takes me to the four corners of the globe. And, well, it just was too much. It ruined my health, it ruined my sanity, and it definitely cost way too much. These days, I use GoToMeeting. It allows me to have meetings when I want them with the people who need to talk to me. And I have, I'd say, even better communication now than I did when I was flying to all corners of the globe. I love GoToMeeting. It's so easy to use. And with HD faces, it's just like meeting in person. So I know you'll love it too. Here's what I would like you to do. I want you to try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Don't wait. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code ENTERPRISE. Be sure to use the promo code ENTERPRISE. That's GoToMeeting. Meeting is believing. And we thank Citrix for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. I want to thank my panelists for coming on the show. It's been absolutely fantastic to have the two of you. I want to start with you, Curtis. You are here at Enterprise Connect covering the show like myself. Where can people find your stories? Where can people find your coverage? What will you be up to in the next 72 hours?
Well, I'm going to be live blogging a number of the conference sessions. I'm also going to be covering a couple of them on LinkedIn, on Twitter. The place to find me, first of all, is at Enterprise Efficiency. That's www.enterpriseefficiency.com. There's an anchor post there that shows you what I'm planning to cover. Look for me on Twitter, KG4GWA, LinkedIn, Curtis Franklin. Would love to have people follow me. Ask me questions about what I'm seeing here. It makes the coverage that much richer.
Thank you, Curtis. And Glenn, aside from the fact that you're building this network, you're also going to have to tear it down and monitor. So we know what you're going to be doing. But what do you want our audience to know about? Where can they find your work? Where can they find more about what you're doing?
I think probably the best place at the moment, certainly for the next 6 or 8 weeks, would be interop.com.
There we go, yes.
Yeah, for the Interop project.
It's coming up.
And there's been some stuff happening in Information Week.
Right, right. So basically, if they look at any enterprise news source, they're going to find you somewhere.
Yes, that's correct. That. Yeah.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you for being part of our show. And you know what? Did you know that we do this show live? That's right. Every Monday, we gather here on the Twit TV network to be able to share all the enterprise goodness with you. So if you're listening to this on a download, why not try stopping by one of our live shoots? That's every Monday at noon Pacific time. While you're there, go ahead and log into our chat room. You'll be able to find all the interesting people who populate Twit TV and are part of the Twit Army. We've got some of the most brilliant engineers and some of the funniest trolls that you'll ever meet. Also, why not subscribe to Twit? That's right. If you go to twit.com/Twit, you'll be able to find all the different ways that you can have every episode of Twit delivered to your portable device. You want it on your iPhone? Sure. You want it on your iPad? Okay. You want it on your Zune or your Android device? If you want it, we've got it. And it's also a really good way to make sure that you miss none of the episodes of the best dang enterprise show in the world. Also, we've got a brand new YouTube page. If you go to youtube.com/Twit, you can subscribe and participate in what is becoming a lively discussion, a way to sort of get feedback. Now, feedback to me, if you want to contact me directly, the easiest way is to go onto Twitter, twitter.com/PadreSJ. There you'll be able to find out what the Digital Jesuit is doing in between shows. You'll be able to comment on previous shows, and you'll be able to suggest topics for future shows. Finally, I want to thank everyone who has helped us out, especially CyberDog, who, he translates all of our episodes into the show notes. My producer back in the brick house, Jason, I'm not sure if he has a camera on himself, but he really should because he does a tremendous job trying to corral all the cats. That is, there he is. Corral all the cats, that's why it is. And my super producer, Karsten. Last of all, I want to thank you for coming by to watch our live coverage of Enterprise Connect here in Orlando, Florida. I'm Father Robert Ballester, and remember, if you want to know what's going on in the Enterprise, just keep quiet.